Julianne Good, and this is Psych 101. We're here to make psychology understandable, entertaining, enlightening, and hopefully informative, with tips for creating a healthier state of mind for you, your family, and friends. Today I'm going to go into doing a more personal show on music and well-being. I've been a musician for most of my life, and I want to pay homage tonight with two of my favorite musicians who I've had the honor to work with on and off for many, many years over at Long Beach City College. And first of all, I would like to go in and just make a statement about music, because I think music means so many things to so many people, and it's such a personal form that a lot of us just sometimes don't even think about the true meaning of what music means in our lives. Music is a universal language, a window into the soul. It travels beyond what we can comprehend logically. It speaks to nearly everyone on this planet with one melody or another. Music makes us humane. And it's also the rebellionness and freedom within structure that a lot of us don't think about either. And from a scientific standpoint, Plato once said, "Music gives a soul to the universe, wings to the mind, flight to the imagination, and life to everything." And Albert Einstein once stated, "If I were not a physicist, I would probably be a musician. I often think in music. I live in my daydreams in music. I see my life in terms of music, as do I." Tonight, my guests are Tom Dussman, a music educator and the choir director over at Long Beach City College, and Kevin Kearney, the pianist extraordinaire who has had the privilege of working with Tom for about 24 years now. And a little bit about Tom. He's been a music educator for 40 years. And sadly, on June the 6th, he will retire from his beloved Long Beach City College, where he developed the very popular and successful commercial music program. Kevin has been a pianist since he was 8 years old. He attended Golden West College and Orange Coast Community College. He also attended Cal State Long Beach and received his bachelor in piano performance. He has worked with Tom at Long Beach City College since 1984. And currently, he is studying a master's in music studies at USC. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining me.
Welcome.
Hi, Julie.
Pleasure. Thank you. It's a pleasure to have you on. I want to open up with that Long Beach City College had a retirement party for Tom last night that about 50 of his closest friends and family attended, and I was also in attendance, and it was very heartfelt and heartwarming, and it's such a testimony to both of you for the history that you've created at Long Beach City College. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that was quite a bash.
Yes, it was. I would like to start off with asking both of you, what do you think makes music such an important part of people's well-being?
Well, Kevin, why don't you go ahead, and then I'll go off that.
I just think music helps people in so many ways. It can help you cope with personal problems, personal difficulties. If you're going through a rough part in your life, music can be an outlet, you know, especially, I mean, for somebody that's not a musician, just listening to music can be so therapeutic, you know, to anybody, and musicians included. But if you're a musician yourself, you know, being able to express yourself through your instrument or through your voice, or through composition or whatever, is just an amazing way of channeling, you know, whatever emotions you're experiencing and creating something at the same time. And for me, music has helped me so many times in my life, or on a day-to-day basis, really. I think it's just an amazing gift from God or whoever you want to say it's from. It's just out there, and it helps everybody, I think.
And Tom?
Well, I agree wholeheartedly with Kevin. And as a vocalist, I don't think there's much difference as far as the feeling that you get from expressing it. I really love the fact that it makes no difference what level you are. As Kevin said, when you don't even have to be a musician or a performer, you can just like to listen to music, and everybody does. Everybody has their own favorite kind of music, and I think it does the same thing to everybody, but it all sounds so different. Maybe it's a little bit like golf. You know, you don't need to be a professional golfer to, one, play golf or appreciate it. And with music, you can enjoy it at any level. The best musicians in the world are not privy to the enjoyment of it. It can be somebody at an entry level, when, of course, we all were at one time, just coming in, learning how to read music and the scales. And you don't even need to read music, of course. It's kind of magical. No, it's not kind of magical. It's magical.
It is.
Mm-hmm. And I just love that. And everybody can share it at whatever level they're in at and get the same amount. You know, you could scale on one side would be ability and all of that, but on the other side, part of that scale would be how much you enjoy it. And somebody who is maybe not very good, as maybe we could judge them as being, which wouldn't be fair, but they would maybe say they're not as good as somebody else, and yet their enjoyment level might be higher than somebody else. So that's the magic part of it.
It is. It transforms you into another state of mind. You know, you may be feeling like very sad and lonely, and you throw some tune on that you really connect with, and then all of a sudden you're out of that space and out of that time of being alone and sad, and it takes you someplace else. You can only be in the moment when you are listening to music most of the time, or especially performing. You are so in the moment. So I would like, can you tell us a little bit each personally about how music has transformed your lives?
Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, you want me to go for? Okay. Well,
okay.
Well, it's helped me make a living my whole life. And to make a living at something that you enjoy as much as I enjoy music is kind of a miracle in that sense. As a choir director, I start at the beginning. I give the students, people in my groups, a song, and then we start one note at a time, and we learn it. And if you don't enjoy that process, it could be, you know, you're just waiting around for the concert. That would be kind of a drag. So I just enjoy all of that. And I've had the good fortune of standing in front of some wonderful singers. And some of them learn by looking at the notes, and some of them learn by listening to them, and then they can sing them back. They have great tonal memory. And again, I don't think it makes any difference which way you go about learning the music. It's what it does to you when you do learn it. And then I try to take it to as high a level as I possibly can, depending on, again, the people in front of me. You know, make them try to see that to learn it to the best of their ability will make them and the audience that we perform for everybody feel better. And that seems to work. You know, they get better and better, and they enjoy it. If you don't enjoy that process, that's a sure waste of time. But I can tell that most of the people that I stand in front of and wave my arms enjoy that process.
Yes, and you do make it enjoyable. That was one of the things that was brought up last night several times as to how much fun you are to work with, and I highly agree. And you have to make it fun, you know, and you've done such a great job, both of you, at doing that, of bringing sheer joy into your work and the process. And I've had the privilege of being in the evening jazz choir several rounds, and it's amazing to see the faces and watch the process from week to week of how people become better vocalists and become more disciplined. And if they're so on reading music, they become better and better and better because you help to connect up the melodies and the tones to what's on paper. You bring it alive.
Yeah, if I could say, Tom is like a painter. You know, he's bringing these tones out of the choir, and he knows how to tell them, you know, shape your mouth this way to form the vowel this way, so everybody can get that type of sound that he wants. Because there's many different ways you can say a vowel, for example, and he wants to get that blend that comes from. Somebody has to not only be a musician, but, well, it's another type of music, you know, forming those sounds with vocally. And I sit there and I watch him, you know, kind of like a sculptor chiseling away at a big block of marble, you know. And after a while, there's this, you know, this beautiful sculpture. But, you know, it's like the producer knowing, you know, how to, you know, achieve that, you know, sound that he has in his mind. So, and I think, you know, any musician does that. If, you know, Tom does it with the choir, you know, I love, one of my favorite times in learning a piece is when I'm first learning it. I can barely play any of it, but it's just getting my fingers around certain, you know, maybe difficult parts, or just learning the fingerings of certain melodies and or figures in the piano. I enjoy that process. It's like, it's because I go really slowly, and it's just, it feels good to play the piano. I mean, it feels physically good, and I think it's good. It's good for a person anyway. Just it's good for you mentally, but it's also good for you physically, I think, because you're getting in touch with, I don't know, the sensitivity of pressing an instrument like that. It's I don't know. It's hard to describe, but it's. That process, I enjoy it, even before I can even play the piece, you know. And I don't know, there's all different stages of learning music. And, of course, it's harder maybe when you can finally play it and then you really need to interpret it. And that takes more like, it's more like imagination than brain power, you know, to try to bring it up to a higher level. But it, to me, all the process is enjoyable. And you talk about transforming, you know, you can get, you know, I could be in a bad mood, you know, I didn't sleep well or whatever, or I had, you know, X reasons to be in a bad mood, but sitting there and working on a piece on the piano can, like, totally turn that around.
Yes, I would imagine, though, the whole thing, at least for the way that I interpret it when I have to learn a new piece of music, as there are so many processes in my brain that are involved. And not only, well, once I go through that process of learning it just note per note, then you're right, then it's the interpretation, and then it's getting the emotion engaged in it to make it sound realistic, so that when you're singing and performing to the audience, it's believable. They can sit there and they can relate to it, because it's not like you're reading off something to them with some music notes involved. You have to engage the emotional part of it also. And then it's also the feeling part of it. I know when I'm really engaged in it, it gives me goosebumps. And then I know that everything is fully, fully firing.
You talk about the psychological side. I guess if we could define what causes a goosebump, we could define what we're trying to do right now. Because physiologically, something changes in the body to cause those goosebumps to come up. I suppose it's a release of some kind of endorphin, but it's way beyond my knowledge of how it's done. But the fact that it can be done because of your involvement in music, again, at whatever level, that's the magic of it. You can take a great jazz saxophonist, and he'll enjoy or not enjoy playing a solo or something, and then you get somebody who is just, again, all entry level, and they can play something or sing something and get absolutely the same amount of enjoyment, if not more. And that enjoyment includes a release of endorphins, a feeling of accomplishment, a feeling of sharing. And that's a big deal, too, because there's no performance without an audience.
Right.
And I've told people all along that, you know, it takes somebody to listen to you to make that a performance. And at that point, the music goes up a notch, or maybe many. We practice a long time to put on two concerts every semester.
Mm-hmm.
But the music gets to yet another level as soon as the curtain comes up and we sing the same exact songs with the same words, same notes, same timing, and we sing it for an audience, and it's different because now we're sharing it.
Exactly. And then you have the adrenaline rush of every performer up there, because no matter how seasoned you are, you still get the adrenaline rush, the butterflies in the stomach, and all that wonderful energy just happening, and maybe a little bit of shakiness at the beginning, but everything just, you know, kind of sits in after a while, and you're just on, and it's a connection to other people like no other, I would say.
I would say so, too. And in my voice class, I try to talk about dealing with those nerves, because sometimes you can practice something and get it right to the level you want, and it was just happening in the practice room or practicing in the car or the bathroom, wherever you sing and practice. For singers, it's, you know, bathrooms a lot. And then you get out there in front of an audience, and you don't do as well as you would like to have. And it's frustrating sometimes, because you put in all that time and then nerves block that. So I deal a lot of I spend a lot of time talking about that and how I call it my mental green room. And every performer, major performer, if they're singing in a concert hall, they have a special room that they go into before the curtain comes open, and that is a green room. It's where artists collect and cool down. You don't have to deal with sound check anymore. That's over. You don't rehearse anymore. That's over, because you spent a lifetime doing it, or preparing a show. You spent many hours getting that particular thing ready. But a green room is designed to relax. And that's kind of the key. Great athletes have an ability to relax under huge amounts of pressure. And the more they relax, the better the chance of their abilities coming out and doing the best they possibly can. So sometimes I think it's more than just rehearsing until the blood runs off your fingers. I think it's learning how to relax your own way. And what I do is I say, okay, now, sit there and put both feet on the floor and relax and just sit down, and now decorate this mental green room. And you can, money is no object. You can put any kind of furniture you want. You can dim the lights. There's food around. It's always in a green room before there. There's what they call it, green room amenities. And it's, you know, it could be wine, water, soft drinks, fruit trays, whatever. But you can design that in your mind. You're just in that room, and you can put pictures on the wall and dim the lighting, and maybe even have some soft music in the background. Well, while I'm doing this to my voice class, everybody's got their eyes closed, and I really have a tough time sometimes bringing them back. I say, okay, you're all chickens. It's like a form of hypnotism, but here's the point. I said, while you were doing that, all those moments that you spent creating that mental space, you were not being nervous. And those were, they're like healing moments. and it really, I think it helps them a great deal. The earth will also continue to turn, and the sun will come up and down and all of that, regardless of how good or bad we do, we need to take more pressure off ourselves. And the more pressure
That's
we can
true.
Learn to take off ourselves when we perform, the more likely good things will happen that we did rehearse, the good things that we will remember the words, we will remember the fingering, we will remember the timing, and we'll connect at a much higher level. Fear is a very low level. You know, it's what makes cavemen run from saber-toothed lions.
Right. It sucks up a lot of energy that's unnecessary. So, yeah.
It sucks up a lot of energy. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. So, and I've watched you almost put the choir into a meditative trance there for a while. So I definitely witnessed that. And I think it's also incredible to mention that both of you have worked from various age groups, from anywhere from children to probably mostly teens on up to the 80s. There have been a few parts of the choirs that I have been happy to get to know, and the people that have been in their 70s and 80s and just unbelievably alive. Just such a gift to have around. Just their sense of humor and musicality and all their life experiences. Can you talk about working with different age groups of students, and what made you keep on being teachers for so many years?
Let me throw this to Kevin, because in my voice class, actually at Long Beach City College, it's like a one-room schoolhouse. You have people of all ages, of all different abilities and levels, all in the same classroom at the same time. Now, that could be a daunting problem for somebody, but we like it. I've seen how Kevin relates to all ages. And then he, for the voice class, he works with them individually in his practice room. So over to you, Kevin, on that.
I mentioned to you, Julie, before that, you know, an accompanist and the singer, it's kind of like, you know, a hairdresser and his client, you know. The people come in and they talk to me about their lives, you know, a little bit while we have our 15 minutes to perform, I mean, to rehearse. So I get to know a lot about people, you know. I mean, certain things, and when people want to open up and they want to tell, sometimes people just, they'll tell me stuff about their lives. So anyway, I come to realize, you know, how important music is, these people, and so many wonderful people have, you know, that I've worked with over the years at the City College. But yeah, as Tom mentioned, all age groups, you know, there's I know people that are in their 80s that are still active. This one dear friend, that she's, you know, she still sings every week beautifully, and she, I think she's in her early 80s, but she drives herself to the college, you know, she's independent, she doesn't have so many of the problems that I've seen younger people have, and I think a lot of it is because she looks forward to that music, and she lives through that music, and she loves to perform. And I really do think that music keeps a person young. You know, it to be able to express yourself and say something significant and that people can relate to. And I see how the young kids in the class love to hear her sing, you know, and to other people in the class, because they're seeing, you know, this wisdom that a person, an older person has, that just comes out. You know, a person can interpret song lyrics, you know, in a much different way, or maybe a more meaningful way, when a person obviously has lived through certain life experiences. So, yeah, it, for the different age groups in the class, you know, it's really, I think it's really helpful. I mean, it's really good for younger students and all different kinds of age groups to come together, so there's not that kind of separation where people, you know, might be standoffish. They don't want to speak to, you know, somebody that's outside of their age group because they think they might not relate. But, you know, I'm kind of going on. But and another thing is when they're in the class, you know, some of these kids, they'll want to sing a jazz standard too because they've heard somebody else sing it. So it's like there's a, exchange of different styles going on, you know, and the older people will hear somebody do a rap song. So they, you know, sometimes they'll make a comment that was really nice, you know,
mm-hmm.
and the young person isn't expecting to hear that. They're expecting to hear, ugh, that was horrible.
Right. You know? And yeah. And then the younger people are singing jazz tunes from the 30s and 40s and I could just see on their faces sometimes when they're going through the lyrics, like, what does this mean? What were people back in the 30s and 40s thinking when they wrote this lyric? You know, it's very funny. And I think you're right. I think with the mixture of age groups, there is a respect that builds between the generations. And there is that connecting bond of the music that's bringing them together. And there, you know, I see more of an understanding building up and the generational walls coming down. It's a beautiful thing to see.
Yes, it is. It really is. It's part of that magic.
Yeah.
Something that Kevin and I have been, you know, fortunate enough to share and watch, and so many people have come and gone in our classes, and of course, as you mentioned last night, we had that retirement bash for me. There, so many people came back from years of my high school days back in the early mid 70s, and to hear them say what music has meant to them and how it helps them, has helped them through their lives. That puts us in a really, I didn't realize it at the time, but a very important position. It wasn't our responsibility to, in any way, make them listen to it and feel better. It was just kind of, I think it's our responsibility to bring their abilities to the highest potential for them. And now when you've got a group, you've got different potentials. You know, you've got people that are really outstanding singers and other people who maybe aren't quite as good, but maybe can sing with every bit as much feeling. And, you know, there's an average kind of bar that you want to get to, and then you want to push that even higher. And that's where the performance comes in, because then it gets better because you're sharing it with people. I like what Kevin mentioned about some of the people, the older people, listening to rap tunes. It makes me think of the younger ones when they sing a standard. It may be brand new to them, even though it was written in 1943 or something.
Right.
If you've never heard it, it's a new song to you.
Yes, it is.
And I love and marvel at the way my younger choirs can make those songs sound. When I was teaching high school, I used to call it the juicy fruit sound because young voices singing an old standard, a professional group couldn't sound like that. There's a freshness in the voice of a younger person. And there it is. They've got their own stamp on a 1930s song. And that's just pretty cool. And again, it's new to them, and it's a fresh sound. Now, instead of juicy fruit, we call it the orbit sound.
Yeah, definitely. And Kevin, I want to make mention, too, that you had mentioned that you might need to leave early, so I want to respect that. Is there anything that you would like to add before you depart?
Well,
I don't want to use that word depart with Kevin. It's dearly departed.
Oh, right. Before I depart.
You leave.
This planet.
It's 7:29. He's got all kinds of time. Go.
Right. Give me a few more minutes. No. No, I did want to mention about the community college and, you know, the aspect of people coming. So many people that I've worked with over the years seem to come to the college with maybe rebounding from some event in their life or a job change, or they've gone through a relationship problems or a divorce, or they've had a car accident or recovering from addiction, and they come to the community college and they take these classes and they're nurtured by these, well, in our case, music classes, you know, and they might take a few exploratory, you know, classes, and then after a couple of semesters, I talk to them and they say, oh yeah, I'm taking all these GE classes now, and I decided to work on, you know, a degree, you know, and I think it's served such a important bridge in people's lives that really need an outlet, and they don't know exactly where they want to go yet, you know, but they might come and they take a singing class or they'll take a piano class, and they find that, number one, they can deal with, it's good to have some order, you know, to complete some assignments and stay with it, and it gives a sense of accomplishment, and it also, you know, creates confidence, and it gives people an idea, well, there's another alternative to, you know, sitting around, you know, I might be unemployed, but I don't want to just, you know, sit inside my house and you know, dwell about my problems. Well, I can be out here learning something, and, you know, and it creates maybe opportunities for people to help themselves. And I think it's, you know, it's sad that the state seems to be, they want to discontinue that, but I don't want to talk negative stuff, but it's been all these years that, you know, I've been with Tom at the college, and we've seen so many people come through, you know, and I've seen so many people that are inspiring to me, you know, maybe somebody's recovering from a horrible auto accident, you know, but they're dealing with the pain, they're taking, you know, choir or something, and it's really neat to see that kind of healing, you know, going on.
Yeah, it's music therapy. And for the listeners who don't know what's happening, the state of California, during its budget cuts, have cut out approximately 50% of the funding to all schools for music, arts, and drama programs. So there has just been substantial cuts in what I believe we need to have in our lives. We need to have the creative outlet. If we're going to be finding new solutions to old problems, we need to have our right brain engaged, and that includes having the arts and music programs included. So hopefully, sooner or later, the state of California realizes that and turns this around for all of us. I just want to make mention of that, because a lot of people probably don't even realize that. And, you know, I also want to mention to the listeners, if you would like to call in and join us on this conversation, the number is 800-893-9562. Again, that's 800-893-9562. And I also like to make mention that this program is downloadable from iTunes. It is under Psych 1-on-1, and that's P-S-Y-C-H, the number 1, O-N, and another number 1. So, Kevin, would you like to make any more mention on anything that we've talked about so far?
I was just thinking, you know, for me, and I think for a lot of people, music provides a kind of order, you know. Learning music, not just because it's, you know, there's some math involved, you know, not complicated math, but, you know, dividing rhythms, in, you know, music into beats and measures. And learning, I know for me, when I was saying it's one of my favorite times is learning a piece from the very beginnings, because it's a tactile experience to go through a piece and learn something slowly and in time. And you build confidence when you know that you can play it at a certain tempo, and then you can gradually bring that tempo up. And I think music for me, you know, creates there's a place that where there is order, you know, and it's kind of like an ordered creative universe, but it's kind of like different from the order that's, you know, in our, it's not the same kind of order that you get when you're, you know, you have to have when you're paying your bills or whatever. It's, you know, it's a different type of, you know, but music is kind of like organized sound, and that type of, I think it's interesting. I think it's beneficial to people, you know, to learn music and also, you know, to be able to express themselves that way. I don't know. That was just a thought I had, you know. I'm studying medieval music right now, and they talk a lot about the order, and music is classified as part of, like, mathematics and arithmetic, and it's part of rhetoric, and poetry is part of, you know, they considered poetry to be music, too, like, this one and the same. Anyway, but just the concept of order, and, you know, it can be so creative, but it's kind of like, if you look at a beautiful building that's a striking, you know, skyscraper, and it causes such an impressive, you know, an impression on the viewer. But, you know, those are huge pieces of steel, but they're all connected in a way that's precise. And, you know, it's got to have that order, or else the thing will fall apart, right?
Right.
So the same thing as a piece of music, it sounds beautiful to us. Sometimes we might not know why, but it is, you know, it's organized in such a way that those, you know, sounds and harmonies will sound, you know, consonant together. And so I think it's a wonderful art form, and I sure hope that it continued to be, you know, part of the education. I think it's important not only, you know, for our, you know, for a healing sense to listen to it, but it teaches people in ways they might not know when they're learning it. You know, there are studies that say learning music helps a student every other subject, and who knows why, but I think maybe it's because it causes our brain to function at a higher level in some place we might not understand.
Right, I think it sometimes goes beyond science, but I've definitely seen the studies also that music helps to integrate math and science and make them easier. And in this country, those are the two subjects that we seem to have the most problems with. And we need to have those if we're competing on the global market now. We need to have those skills. Music is involved with that. Wouldn't you agree?
I do.
Yes, of course, I do. I absolutely agree. And I love Kevin's analogy of a building. You know, it has to have order. And there is order, too. You know, that's the whole study of music theory and how chords are structured and how that, and then over those chords, you create this melody of your choice. You know, and there are only 12 notes to use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like 26 letters in the alphabet, and look at the literature that's come from all of that.
It is incredible.
It really is, yeah. I just think what Kevin said is so true. Statistics that maybe are at work here, that one of the reasons we're losing music in the schools, public schools, is the people who can make the decisions don't necessarily have a background in music. And I don't mean as a professional musician. I mean when they had it as part of their education. Kevin was talking about back in the 15th or the during earlier times when music was considered a subject that was absolute, every bit as important as literature and science, and it was, they understood the connection and how all of those working together. You know, you put all your eggs in one basket, and you've got a really heavy basket that does kind of one thing. You need to be well-rounded. The human being has to have, in order to function at their highest level, of science and math, and we also need athleticism. We need to stay in shape, and then we need the arts. And those three in balance make a human being what a human being can be, can aspire to. Once you get those out of you, if you have too much athleticism, and this is coming from Socrates, you ever heard of that guy? He said, then there's the barbaric aspect that comes out. And that makes sense, too, because look at the Dark Ages when, you know, there weren't too many bands around during the Dark Ages except for roaming bands
of
barbarians, you know. And what is the first thing they do? They smash things up and try to, historically, there's been a lot of, let's do away with great art.
Right.
You know, look at Germany in the 40s. They burned books. They burned art. They kind of understood how important it was.
Right. And,
yeah, in an evil sense.
Right.
And I don't mean that the people that that are in charge are evil. I just think they're, you know, it's, I think in the Bible, Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. They're ignorant. It's unfortunate. And I realize, too, as a music educator, I don't think I have maybe a handful of people who went on to be an administrator or a politician in all my teaching experience. And I don't know what that says. I guess they're going on and doing other things. But if you're an administrator, if you're a politician, and you've understood, if you were in a marching band or if you were in a choir or you were in an instrumental group, you'd understand how important, what that added to your life.
Right, and I think a lot of the politicians have forgotten that, sadly enough. Where do you think the future of music and music education is headed?
I think it's going to be quiet for a while. I really do. I've got the feeling we're entering a bit of a dark age. Not just because the commercial music department or the jazz and pop department at Long Beach City College has been eliminated, which is even scary to even say that. But that's a direction. You know, it's like taking athletics out of high school. All the people that would have been involved in those athletic programs, the teamwork that comes from, I know that because in high school, I was an athlete, and it created a different person out of me. If it would have been all athletic, I think I would have been a little bit barbaric, but it was tempered with music.
Mm-hmm.
But the same kind of teamwork that you have on any kind of team is the same thing you have when you're in a group and you work together. We're in this world with other people. And when you put something at a high level together, you learn more about yourself and you learn more about other people, how to get along. And that's what a team is, and that's what a choir is, and that's what a band is. That's all of that together. It's not just one thing.
Right.
We have to have those three elements of the science, and the physical, and the arts.
Yeah, definitely balance. That's
and
one
historically,
thing.
That has proven to be true.
Yes.
If you don't have that, then your society goes to the dark ages.
Yeah, and sadly, I agree with you that we may see a temporary darkness period on this, but we will keep our music alive whatever way we can. And I would like, and Tom, I'd like you to know that I actually did get your song, and I would like you to kind of do a little comment about this. The song is called How High the Moon. When was this recorded?
Oh, gosh, I think in 2000 or maybe before that. We've been recording CDs, and of course they were LPs before that, ever since I went to the college, 1982. And that takes music to a higher level, too. It's one thing to perform in front of an audience, and I talked about that live thing. And then when you get in the studio, you want it to, could you listen to it back, and you say, well, I can do better. Let's take that up. Let me try it again. Let's do this. And so earlier in my career, we recorded I think we recorded 14 CDs now at the college. And I really enjoyed that. Budget cuts delved into that situation, too. So that's unfortunate, because that was a real part of my feeling of what I was an educator to do, is to put people in the studio and create something that they could keep for the rest of their lives. And luckily, we've done that. And this, what you're going to hear, is just one of hundreds of songs we recorded. Kevin playing piano, you'll hear his introduction. And I'm glad you got that MP3 that I sent, because you're also going to hear cracks and pops, because we took it off a record. This evidently was before 2000, from earlier, maybe in the 90s, where everything was LP, and then somebody put this on a CD for us. So, and it's a great standard, How High the Moon.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. So here we go. This is Tom Dussman directing, Kevin Carney on piano. And which one of your choirs sang on this?
Probably studio singers.
Okay, great. Here we go. Wonderful.
I'd stack that up against any professional group. That's when I listen to these years later, I realize how good they were. At the time, I'm thinking, oh, we need to fix this, we need to fix that. But the big picture from way up here in the future is that was great. Kevin played great. That was Danny Donnerly on guitar.
Oh, that was Danny.
A student at the time who went on to be and is currently a professional musician. Right, Kevin?
Oh, yeah. Danny's great. He's doing music full time, I believe.
Yeah, there's a lot of musicians that Long Beach City College was their springboard. So, one more time, just thank you so much for touching so many lives and just affecting the community so positively. And I want to make a mention to our listeners that this coming Friday and Saturday nights, May 17th and 18th at 7:30 p.m., Tom and Kevin will be giving their final concerts at Long Beach City College. It's called the Spring Thing, and Long Beach City College is on the corner of Carson and Harvey Way in Long Beach, California. So please join us. It'll be wonderful, wonderful concerts and a lot of people and a lot of fun. And what are your future plans right now for both of you?
Go ahead, Kip.
Oh, well, I'm going to be staying on at the college, but it's going to be quite different now that there's not going to be any jazz for a while. So, I'll be playing for voice classes, I believe, and, maybe some classical singers in the applied music program. But I'm going to miss, Tom, obviously. It's not going to be the same place. So, and I'm still going to be going to school. I have another year left studies, so I'm going to be getting into that. And, just trying to keep all the, all the elements of life, spinning and playing and writing and hopefully some, performance opportunities, recording, it's all, hopefully it's all going to be coming together, Well, always looking forward to opportunities. So I'm sure there'll be some more opportunities to work with Tom and his group, Beachfront Property, and maybe some arranging for them. I'd like to try that, and future's wide open.
That's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah, I didn't hear what you said, Julie, the last thing you said.
Oh, I was just making a comment to Kevin that's, it's a good positive way of looking at it of,
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Yeah. I think for both of us, pretty big changes. Luckily, Kevin is as adept playing classical music as he is playing jazz. Very few people on the planet can make that transition as easily as he can and has. There's good music and there's bad music. Or that's what Duke Ellington said. There's just two kinds of music, good music and bad music. Of course, that's in the ear of the beholder. But I've heard Kevin play classically in class when he would accompany somebody, would be Schumann or Brahms, and he plays with the same sensitivity that he does no matter who it is, and that's a gift. And that's, as musicians, I was trained classically. In my office, I only listen to classical music because it just, I don't know, it makes more creative and more relaxing. Unless it's 20th century or something weird. But the classics are just, I think I have a chemical change in my body when I listen to it. So I don't want to say that just because, I want to say just because jazz and pop and commercial music is going away at Long Beach City College, there's still plenty of music with really good orchestra, wonderful choir with Sky and Gulo as the director. Brian Hamilton is an incredible band director, and Marshall Fulbright Orchestra. So we've got some young, very adept people at what they do. And there is this, as long as it's good music, I think the future is bright there. And Kevin can slide up to any kind of style and play it, and I know it'll be fine for him. As for me, I just won't be standing in front of a choir waving my arms anymore. And the old thing about when one door closes, something will open up. I don't know what those doors are, but I know that this will close Saturday night. And this energy that I have and that we all have as musicians has to go somewhere.
Right.
I'm kind of excited. It's about, I don't know what it's going to be. It's like when I write, I can't wait to hear what I'm going to say.
Right.
And I think that's the good thing about being a creative person. If you have faith and confidence in your energy,
I agree.
Something will come along.
Yeah. I agree. And thank you both so much for joining me.
Hey, Kevin made it the whole distance.
You did. Thank you, Kevin. We're honored.
He's got so much to say, and it's so eloquent.
This party was too good to leave.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us. And thank you again to Tom Dustman and Kevin Carney from Long Beach City College. And please try to join us at the concert on Friday and Saturday evenings. And thank you so much. This is Julianne Good for Psych 101. Take care of yourself and take care of each other.